Good morning.
Good morning.
You actually didn't have to do that, but thank you anyway. Shannon, Heather, and I hope to convince you this morning that there's something very special about our Bliss Tactile symbols. And apparently, ATIA has already convinced because they saved the best for last. That's the only joke I have. Enjoy it. All right, so the next three slides go into some depth on our backgrounds. I'll also say that this entire slide set, along with every word I'm going to say and every word they're going to say, is in the notes that we provide. So you don't have to take any notes here. Anyway, so the next three slides go into some depth on our backgrounds, but I'm just going to skip over them and say that I'm an ex-engineer. Heather is an education AAC and AT specialist. Shannon is an SLP and an AT specialist. We are all volunteers in this effort. And as a result, we have no relevant financial, no relevant non-financial relationships to disclose. In fact, we're just members of a team of volunteer therapists, AT specialists, and engineers. And you'll see who they all are later on in this presentation. So here I'm skipping through those things I said I would skip through. If you walk out of this presentation this morning with a working understanding of these three topics, then we're convinced that you'll be prepared to leverage this new technology and free resources to help your students develop communication skills independent and free of any external limitations. Here's our agenda. So we're going to begin by just setting a baseline understanding of tactile and tangible symbols. Then we're going to credit Project CORE out of the University of North Carolina with their creative insight on tactile symbols before we talk about how we believe their approach falls short of an optimal tactile symbol system. We believe we have an optimal system here based on Bliss symbolics. So we'll take a little bit of time introducing you to Bliss symbols and our Bliss tactile symbols. And we built an entire ecosystem around our tactile symbols, so we want you to know how you can obtain all of these free resources. We're talking about more than just ideas here. So Shannon, Heather, they're going to share with you what they have learned in using these tactile symbols in the classroom. You'll have an opportunity to ask any questions you'd like, but it would really be great if you could hold them until this point in the presentation. It would be great. If there's time near the end, I'd like to tell you more about some third-party products and DIY devices that you may want to take advantage of and use along with our tactile symbols in the classroom. And we have all of those items up here at these front tables. So once the presentation's over, please come up and get hands-on experience with them. Am I moving my hands?
No, I was just saying that right now I want to touch everything.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I take things personally, everything. So you've all seen tactile symbols before, even if just in pictures. So the slide shows two examples of them. They're used by individuals who are typically used by individuals who are blind or visually impaired to communicate their needs and desires and gather information about the world around them. The slide I say shows two tactile symbols. One has a plastic starfish glued to a card labeled star. And below that is a round card with seven black and white raised dots, and the card is labeled snow. So traditional tactile symbols are normally created by gluing some sort of physical object onto a rigid backing. The physical object may have some intuitive relationship with the symbol's referent. So the slide shows an image of a plastic spoon, part of a plastic spoon, glued to a card, and the card's labeled eat. it's much harder to design tactile symbols for concepts that are less tangible. So here we have a tactile symbol that just has a raised circle, and that's to represent the concept yes. There'll be significant variation among tactile symbol sets for those less tangible concepts because different designers will just represent them differently. There are challenges like, what do you do with a really large object? You can't fit it on the card. What do you do to represent a tree? Do you use a leaf? Do you use a piece of bark? And similarly, what do you do with very complex concepts? They're multi-component. So is a tennis ball the right representation of gym class? It's really rare for any tactile symbol set to contain more than 100 items, and I'd say frequently many fewer than that. When you're only modeling a few things, there's little motivation to first establish a set of rules and then base your designs on those rules. Without rules, it's predictable. There's going to be little carryover from one symbol to a related symbol or the next symbol. And as a result, by definition, these symbol sets have to be learned through rote memorization. I think the most telling aspect of traditional tactile symbol sets, and for that matter, all the popular graphic image sets, is that they're always accompanied by a text label. Ostensibly, that label is there to help the communication partner. The assumption is that only by first reading the text label can you kind of back into why that raised shape was selected for that symbol. And sometimes, not even then. So the slide now shows a tactile symbol with a piece of string glued horizontally onto the symbol. Why do you suppose that raised shape is used to represent the concept to want? The slide here shows 11 tactile symbols from two different tactile symbol sets. In certain instances, there's a relatively intuitive relationship between the raised shape and the symbol's reference. So an arrow to represent the concept to go. You can follow that. But why would a beaded triangle represent the concept more? And I bet if I went around here, everyone in this room could rationalize why a cross, especially a red cross, would represent the concept to help. Well, this one, I think, is made of brown sandpaper. Take a moment and think about how much cultural knowledge you need before you were able to think red cross, help. So the symbols on the right here, they at least are internally consistent. They use a piece of string to roughly represent the concept of now. So that, they have that internal consistency. But where does this symbol set go when you want to extend it to something like to want? All that internal consistency out the window. And imagine trying to intuit what every one of these symbols means without that text on the card. Let's try it. So here we have six shapes taken from two popular tactile symbol sets. There are three physical objects here. We have a rectangle of tinfoil, three beads on a string, and a set of plastic lips, and three 3D modeled shapes, a cross or an X, three ramps, and for lack of a better term, a cresting wave. Okay? Take a second here and try to predict what each one of these symbols represents. Ready? It wouldn't help if I gave you more time. Okay? Here's what they represent. The Rectangle tinfoil is a snack or snack time. The beads on the string, occupational therapy. The lips, speech therapy. The cross is not. Three ramps, finished. The cresting wave, to get. Don't tell anybody else, but how did you do? Okay, I'm, psychically I'm picking up not too well. Imagine that the individual trying to take advantage of these symbols cannot read the text. So I want to now change gears a bit and talk about what I think was a real breakthrough in the development of tactile symbols. Project CORE, a program of the Center for Literacy and Disability at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. They developed a set of universal CORE words in support of their universal CORE communication system. And then, and this is the breakthrough, they created a collection of 3D printable tactile symbols in support of each of those universal CORE words. I personally think this is brilliant. So the slide here shows an example of an early version of their symbol for the concept to go. It has a raised arrow from left to right, the word go engraved, and raised braille dots for the letters G and O. And all those are on the front top surface of the 3D print. Then they took the extra step of making all the design files available for free to the public as downloadable STL files. An STL file is an input to the 3D printing process. Because those symbols are 3D printable, you can make an unlimited number of exact copies of each of their symbols for relatively cheap. So, my lovely assistants, my assistants are passing around examples of those symbols now for you to explore tactily. Test in particular, how does the braille feel when printed on the top surface of a 3D print? But just explore them tactily in general. And we'll collect those from you once you've had a chance to evaluate them. So, this was a breakthrough. This idea was brilliant. Unfortunately, STL files, you can't reasonably modify them. I have tried. There's no support for extending the symbol set. There are 36 universal CORE words, 36 3D printable symbols, and that's all you have support for. My personal opinion, including braille and engraved text, along with that raised shape on the same surface of the symbol, just unnecessarily complicates tactile processing. If you look at all 36 symbols together, it's hard to see features that tie together related concepts beyond their word class. In many cases, it's even hard to tell why a raised shape was selected for that symbol, for that symbol's referent. So the slide shows the current Project CORE symbol for the concept more. Maybe you can tell me why three raised dots is intuitively related to the concept more. Just like the previous approaches to tactile symbols, to me, I see little conceptual or tactile carryover from one symbol to the related symbols. And that, to me, means these have to be learned through rote memorization. So if the previous two approaches are non-optimal, what would an optimal tactile symbol system look like? First of all, it would be based on a conceptual language. There's no need for cognitive transformations from things like the raised shape to a sign language to a concept, or raised shape to Braille letter to English word to concept. You immediately start conceptually. The symbols themselves would be comprised of a few lines and simple curves, lowering cognitive load. The set would be extensible. By using a generative language, new symbols can easily be created from existing symbols. The design of symbols should be flexible. You and your students should be in complete control of the amount of complexity in the symbol. And because it's a 3D printing process, once you establish a design you like, creating exact copies of that design, simple as 3D printing them. Fifth, a standards body of some kind should be involved in grounding that language and controlling the creation of new symbols. They should establish a set of rules around symbol design. And then they should enforce those rules when new symbols are created to ensure conceptual carryover from symbol to symbol. The symbol should be independent of culture, so cultural knowledge shouldn't be a prerequisite for understanding them. The standards body itself should be multicultural and multilingual. So with those criteria in mind, I'd like to take a few minutes to introduce you to Bliss Symbolics.
If you think it's best to teach children to communicate by using a language instead of a collection of arbitrary images or shapes, I'd like to tell you about the language of Bliss Symbolics. Bliss symbols were developed by Charles Bliss in the 1940s. He was looking for a language that could be learned and used by anyone on Earth. His language is constructed, meaning consciously devised instead of naturally evolved. Ideographic, meaning graphic symbols that represent an idea or concept without phonology. And generative, meaning able to create an infinite number of concepts from an initial finite set. The language is purely conceptual. The symbols don't have to be translated into a spoken language in order to be understood. This has special implications for cognitively disabled individuals. Bliss symbols are constructed using a few straight lines and simple curves. As such, they require less cognitive effort to explore and recognize. For tactile learners, this means that the symbols can be processed more quickly and reliably than symbol sets that are more complex in their construction. Basic Bliss symbolics are pictographic in nature. Their associated concepts relate easily to their graphic. For example, the roof-shaped symbol represents protection. More complex concepts build on these simpler concepts. Here are more simple shapes for simple concepts. More complex concepts can be constructed from these simpler concepts by overlaying one on the other. Here, we see the arrow concepts overlaid on the enclosure and container concepts. Convey new concepts like into, out of, get and give. A female protector is a mother. A similar and consistent process is used for father. A container with water is a bath. A chair over water is a toilet. Concepts may also be created by appending one basic symbol to another. For example, all feeling words in Bliss Symbolics have the heart shape at their core. They are then qualified by appending other shapes to represent specific feelings. Feeling plus up means happy, while feeling plus down means sad. Positive feelings mean good, while negative feelings mean bad. Charles Bliss survived the concentration camps of World War II and was deeply affected by Nazi propaganda. When he created his new language, he wanted the language to clearly indicate when a concept was fundamentally an opinion rather than a fact. An adjective or adverb could lean either way depending on your point of view. He put an unstable ankle shape over these kind of concepts. For Charles Bliss, a volcano epitomized action and power, so he drew his action indicator from the shape of a volcano. He asked, what does the eye do? It sees. What does the ear do? It hears. And so on. This is how verbs are easily built from nouns. Our 3D printed Bliss tactile symbols reflect the two types of indicators in the top edge of the symbol. Verbs have an action indicator like top. Adjectives and adverbs have an evaluation indicator like top. Nouns, on the other hand, have a rounded top edge. In addition, you can use filament color to distinguish among the parts of speech. In this case, we've used colors from the Fitzgerald key. The symbols can be enhanced by placing engraved text on the back surface, adding braille to the sides, or including holes at different locations for mounting the symbol on a string. You can learn more about the possibilities of representing concepts through Bliss symbols by visiting these websites and pages.
So I was really intrigued by Bliss symbols, by their simplicity, by their predictability, when I first encountered them 40 years ago in college. I hope you feel just a little bit of that yourself right now. And I hope that you can see that this is a language that it operates entirely in the conceptual domain. It's not tied to any particular culture or spoken language. So cultural knowledge is not a prerequisite. So Bliss symbols, like I say, are unlike any other graphic symbol set. They're curated by an international, multilingual, multicultural, non-proprietary standards body. When a new symbol needs to be added to the language, a set of individuals are assigned to ensure that the new symbol adheres to the requirements around symbol design, the rules, and leverages the rest of the language. What process do you think is followed when they need to add a new symbol to PCS or symbol sticks or name your favorite graphic symbol set? The slide shows a screenshot of the homepage for Bliss Symbolics Communication International, BCI for short. And this is the organization that curates Bliss symbols. In 2015, Isaacson and Lloyd saw something special in Bliss symbols that had them wondering about their applicability to the tactile domain. In particular, they wondered, due to their simplicity, features like edges, outlines, and kinesthetic feedback are optimized in raised line renderings of Bliss symbols, which may facilitate recognition of tactile Bliss symbols. In short, the conformational characteristics of Bliss symbols results in stimuli that have minimal complexity or low potential cognitive load, and when rendered as raised lines, have characteristics that may increase the efficiency of perceptual / cognitive processes involved in communication with tactile symbols. So here are three examples of our Bliss tactile symbols. The symbol for to drink, for different, and father. You can see already that that video is a little old, so there's much more flexibility now in where you do things like put text or other things on the symbol, including braille. So we're going to pass around, my assistants will now pass around additional symbols for you to keep. These are our tactile symbols. You can see how they're related to one another and such. And share with your associates. I see less than 50 people here, so everybody gets three. You get three, you get three, you get three. I don't think Oprah's ever going to live that down. So we make 242 of these symbols available for you to download in STL file format for free from the Volkswitch website. They span the 36 universal core words from Project Core and Gail Van Patenhove's 205-word core vocabulary list for students with intellectual disabilities. The slide shows a screenshot of the web page on the Volkswitch website where you can download the STL files for individual symbols or collections of symbols. We also provide a free, easy-to-use tactile symbol designer. You can use that to modify existing symbols and create additional new symbols leveraging those free graphics from BCI. The slide shows a screenshot of the user interface for that tactile symbol designer, creating new symbols, modifying existing symbols, as simple as choosing different options from pull-down lists and typing text into a text box. And you can take advantage of the pictographic nature of Bliss symbols to create motivational tools like these Bliss puzzles. And these are just examples of what you can do. They're also 3D printable. So there are four different layouts here. My fifth picture shows one of those puzzles disassembled. I saw someone playing with that up here already. You can also design 3D printable challenge tile sets and explorers that can help students develop their tactile skills from simple shapes to more complex ones. So the slide shows two challenge tile sets in white and two explorers in color. There's a free, easy-to-use designer for these explorers, challenge tile sets, and the Bliss puzzles. All this is on the website. You download it from there. You introduce these symbols into your classroom the same way you do traditional tactile symbols. But we've taken the extra step of putting together a few explicit teaching plans to help you get started. So the slide shows a printed teaching plan along with the Bliss tactile symbols and a Bliss head explorer that support that teaching plan. We admit the set is small at this point. We would love your help in making that set larger. As you learn more about how to use these symbols in the classroom where you have success, you can add to our collection of explicit teaching plans. Speaking of the classroom, I now want to turn the presentation over to Shannon and Heather so they can give you firsthand information about how these tactile symbols can impact students. And this is the button down here. The one that's raised.
Cool. All right, so I'm Shannon Page, and I am a speech-language pathologist. And I think Ken and I met in some of our maker circles during the pandemic where everybody's Zooming. So this is the first time this group has actually presented together. So we're coming together very well. And when I saw the Bliss symbols, because I've worked as a speech-language pathologist with very complex kids since about 2000, and my first students are in their 20s now, and it's amazing the range, some of the parents I still have relationships with, and the range of skills that they've grown into, and the change in the things I've learned from all of the students that I've worked with. And one of the problems is, if you think about me growing up in the military, every time I moved to a new school district, so I'm in Alabama and in California and Wyoming, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater and you can have to start new, even with curriculum for a student. Because Could you imagine those symbols that Kim showed earlier, that are those tactile symbols with the fork? And now you're in the military, and you're going over to Germany, and you're going to have to start all over. Yeah, they can give you what it was, and when they send you the kit, they kind of tell you what to use, but it's going to have a totally different feel when you put yours together, plus the durability that Kenneth talked about. So when I saw these, I was just like, this is a game changer. So communication is very important to me as a speech language pathologist. If everyone communicates. And when Ken was using his hands, I think about like my husband and my kids. When my kids imitate my husband, you don't need words. And I know who they're imitating or making fun of. But so we all have communication systems. We have a shared system. And what makes these kids that I have unique is they don't have a shared system. The only person they have a shared system with is their caregiver. And so, and even then, it's a guessing game. And I've got parents that I've interviewed who say that he would throw a fit. I thought I knew what he meant. And now that he's got this communication board, I really know what he's meant. And so those, even though they still have temper tantrums, the intensity of those temper tantrums have gone away because they can actually communicate and I don't have to guess. So even with caregivers, it's a guessing game. And I think that's really important to understand is these kids deserve a shared system, and they deserve a shared system they can grow with. And we don't know where they're going to go when they get started. So one of the things we differ on a little bit is when I'm working with kids, I want to make sure the Braille's on the side, because my 2-year-old, my 1-year-old, my 8-month-old had access to books in print, even though I knew they couldn't read it. But by the time they were 3 or 4, they're already seeing long words, short words, and putting words upside down and right side up. And you'll see that in one of the videos. So by giving a child who has no communication something consistent like this, with the words on the front, if the communication partner is gone tomorrow, we've got a paraprofessional, that child still has someone to communicate because the words on the front. The child does not see the word because most of my children are deafblind or very complex, but at least anybody working with them can communicate. The tactile symbols, although we're not teaching them Braille in the beginning, because I don't know where they're going to go. Maybe their vision's going to develop. Maybe it's not, depending on the student. But you can at least tell that this is short and this is long bumps. And so you're starting to give them exposure, and then they can start to make meaning with it later if that's the route they're going to take. So the main thing I focus on when we get started is really just giving them consistent shapes that don't change. So what I'm going to talk about is these are a new concept. These are just being developed. We want to get more people researching with them because I think there's so much potential with the flexibility and how he's created the program. Sometimes you might want the word on the back. So when I was at ASHA, I presented, and I had them in one of Therese Wilcombe's PVC pipes hanging for a student that could kind of grab. And so they could, because of their positioning, we had it hanging. And the student can kind of grab. And I don't have videos because we have a very transient world, and the teachers that started this student in October quit in December. So I've got some other videos, but we have things in the works, so in the future we'll have more video examples of different layouts. But so for this child, you would want the word on the back because the caregiver's looking this way and the child's reaching up this way. And then the child can kind of scan, and they're very consistent layout, and then grab the word that child wants. So I would have that as a demonstration, but somebody liked it so well at ASHA that it kind of went away. And so I'm hoping that is with a child in a classroom somewhere doing really powerful things. But the flexibility of what you can do with these is really huge. And you could make them smaller and you could make them bigger, all based on an open source tag file that Ken has created, and it is awesome. So these, to me, are not an end-all. This is one communication system for the right student. And I think it should be in every toolbox because you never know when those kids walk in the door what they're going to need. And if I could start exposing something that's consistent, and then if this isn't what they need, then I haven't lost any ground. But if it is what they need, I've already started giving them a communication system when they move on to their next setting. And so even if I were giving an assessment, I might see if they attend to the tactile symbol. These, when I look at these symbols, I look at, like, I have a student with autism who had significant executive function disorders or differences. And so for one of my students, I used to always have to give him a Costco icon that we had put some glue around because he liked going to Costco and that kind of calmed him down. I don't know why. But I was thinking if I had this go here and I could, when we're transitioning, give him that go to kind of hold, that would have calmed him down. So it's not necessarily meant to be an alternative. It could also be used as a supplemental system. Think about some of the phonics work we do. And so you could actually create and then pair some of the phonics words that you put together with words that are already in the classroom, and then you've got a tactile symbol. So my mind goes like in a million directions, and then you have to kind of like hold me back and say, all right, but this is what we need to focus on right now. So they can be alternative or supplemental. The physical organization can be adapted based on your student's needs. As I said, we always want the words available, but depending on how you're approaching that individual that's starting to communicate would be based on how you set up the system. That would be your group decision on how you set them up. And you've got layouts that are more portable, so this is done in like a book fashion with their color-coded just like your core vocabulary. And these are all from augmented resources, and Ken's got links for those in the handouts also. So really, there's a lot of different ways that you can display them. Now, think about this. And also, for some of our kids with IDD, they have short-term memory issues. And sometimes we're throwing words at them, and once again, it becomes that alternative system or that supplemental system where I've got a child who's starting to learn to communicate, and you've got a lot of people barking sounds at him, but then I pick him up and I can go, stop, and he knows that means wait. He's holding on to that, which facilitates recognition in the short-term memory. So you take the cognitive load off of the directions. It utilizes the power of touch, which is an underutilized medium, and then the tactile perception of visually impaired is considered much sharper than that of our typical sighted peers. So for all of those reasons, those are things you want to consider in regards to why we would use these symbols. And it starts at the elementary unit so that they can build, and it's not phonics based for those kids with hearing and or vision problems.
Just ask one question. Is the tactile perception of the visually impaired, does that include people with CVIs? Do you know?
That I don't have the research on. I do have an article on that, which is included in the handout. But I can definitely. I'm at a university. We can definitely look at that. But that would be a good question. So, and remember, communication is a system, and we want to think about total communication. So we communicate. We all have different systems. So you communicate with your family in a different way than you communicate at work. And you communicate in a different way with your children than you do with adults. And as Ken said, you know, I didn't want to use my hands too much, and I'm using my hands. But that's a part of the communication that we use. Those are the gestures that impact how we communicate. And it's all of those pieces that work together and not just the words that promote the communication. So if my spouse comes in and says, I had a great day, I know through the tone that it's not the words I'm paying attention to, and that's the pieces that our kids miss. So often what we see when we're introducing kids to new communication systems is we throw all those other communication parts out because we're going to focus on this communication part. And so I want you to think about this as a tool added to a system. You have kids that are already communicating with only one shared communication partner. And so we want to take what they have and we want to think about it as shaping those movements and communicative functions into a more shared system that can carry over into other environments. And so that's what you're thinking about when you're creating a system. So think about my granddaughter was 3 months old, and of course I experiment on my grandchildren all the time, and I gave her a step-by-step button, and you hit the button, and I put a story on it. It was Mr. Brown can move, can you? And so the first thing I did for my three-month-old, who's laying flat, and her arms are typically going this way. So think about our complex kiddos who don't have good motor control. And so I put the switch right behind her hand where it was off. So I'm not taking the hand of her hand. I'm using what she's doing, and I'm putting the switch right behind her hand so that every time she hits it, and she finally hit it, and you watch her eyes, and I've got a video of this, her eyes get like this big, like I did something. And there's like a one-minute pause. And then you see her kind of put that same hand, that's 3 months old, and she hits it again. And every time she hits it, I read the next page. It's a sequence story. And then by the end, she's hit it. Once she hit it 10 times, so after about 5 minutes, it was like hit, hit, hit. So she had learned it. So that's not where I'm going to keep that switch. I would shape it and start moving it and make her reach a little bit harder so that you're starting to grow her and grow that communication system. So think about total communication, and this is a tool that we can introduce and we can shape and build a communication system based on what they are. Total communication, went the wrong way. So think about movement. I'm going to use my grandson, and so he walks into the room, and I've got a cookie jar up here, and he moves in close proximity to that cookie jar. And so there's his movement. His movement is communicating to me. We both know he's eyed that cookie jar. That's part of communication. And then he's going to look at the cookie jar, and he's going to look at me. So there's your eye gaze. That's part of the communication. He's not taught, but I know what he wants. And if I'm not paying attention to him, he's going to start to point. There's your gesture. And then maybe he can't reach the cookie jar, but he can reach the package. So now we've got a 3D object representing the cookie in that cookie jar that he wants. And then he might have to get my attention to get me to look. So there's your vocalization, not a word. But it's to get me to look at him because he wants that cookie. And then there's a verbalization, a cookie, or higher functioning, it could be I want a cookie, or a sign. And then it might be a picture. Maybe he's going to point to the picture on the cookie without using the full object. Or maybe he's going to say, no, will you give me a cookie? Because I've missed all of those other cues. And so when we're working with our kids, we throw all that out because they miss a lot of those, and we don't pay attention to which one of those that the kids have. Before we ever start putting in a system, we need to really, like, check out what they're doing, and we need to grow them, not throw the baby out with the bathwater and start fresh. So these are all considerations when you're starting to think about a communication system. And these are a fantastic tool that I think should be considered, which I'm going to show you why on the next video. So where do you begin? Presume competence. So there was a gentleman named David Premack, and he's a phenomenal researcher, brilliant mind, like, kind of like Greg Vanderhyde. These are the people that I saw. He might like Michael Jackson. I like Greg Vanderhyde and David Premack. So Premack said he was interested in the development of language, and so what he did was he took Sarah the chimpanzee and he developed some tactile symbols, and he set up a system that was very explicit teaching. And after he worked with these chimpanzees, they were putting 3 to 4 words together using tactile symbols. They were commenting, they were asking questions. They were matching. So they weren't just matching labeling. They were expanding their communication, and they were understanding what other people use these symbols for also. So it was a receptive and expressive. And that is your first line into the communication symbols. That's your first research that we have for communication symbols. They taught the chimpanzees to do it. I kind of think if he can teach chimpanzees to do it, I can teach my kids to do it. So his work was then modeled by Marianne Romsky. They all looked at his work when they started designing systems for kids with IDD. Because remember, before 1975, we had longitudinal studies. They did the Iowa study, which started in 1965 for kids with cerebral palsy. And they had some really good information on communication and communication boards. And a lot of the boards we see today are actually modeled from that, but people don't know that that's how far they go back. Then there was the double-edged sword of the public education law, where all the kids started going to school in 1975, and we didn't have the internet back then. So all these really valuable pockets of research-based systems got lost. You had one in Canada with Shirley MacNaughton, and Shirley MacNaughton is the one that first found the Bliss symbols from Charles Bliss and incorporated them into a whole school system. So if you go back and look at her work, she's got Bliss symbols, but not 3D symbols that she used consistently. And why did they go away in the United States? Because it just became so much easier for products like BoardMaker, and so we lost the integrity of some of the systems like the lexigrams that we had prior to that. So presume confidence. If chimpanzees can do it, we can too. Observe what the individuals are already doing, and you want to shape it. Think about words you can use that they're already doing, and then build what they're doing. And be careful of these word of the week for this population, because those are often just lists of words. You want to take and find out, well, every time this child goes out, or every time this child sits in a certain chair, I'm going to try to build words and start just handing them, exposing them to it, rather than placing demands on them, or I'm going to lose them before I get them. You have to have a plan. There are no prerequisites, but you need to know what they're doing, you need to know their environment, and you need to have a plan. We've already seen that these kids fail learning implicitly. My kids are already speaking 3-4 words by the time they're 3 years old. These kids are 3 to 4 years old, and they have no language. So we have to have explicit instruction. We have to have planned opportunities to practice, and we need to do it a lot. Engage. We need to engage our children with things that they like. We need to model, and we need to practice, and that's how our kids are going to learn the system. We need to be patient. It takes a long time to teach these kids. I had one student I started, but with consistent teaching, after 2 years, she had 10 words. She didn't express any knowledge of understanding any of the words until after a year and a half. But between, and I worked in the school systems at that time. So at Christmas, she started using an icon for yellow that we had given her for Play-Doh. And then she started going to the door and finding an icon for go to go to the restroom. So by the end of her second year with us, she had 10 words that she was independently expressing her own wants and needs. And then document what they're doing so that you can make a plan and make sure it's working. So you have to have that documentation, and you build on where they are. Don't follow these word of the week. You need to see what they're doing, and how can you build on what they're doing and what they need to express. And you need to just let them play. So I've borrowed some models. These are two little boys that are very familiar to me. They call me Nona. And I took the whole board of icons. It was the bigger one. And there were about 50 icons on that board. And they proceeded to play with these icons for 30 minutes. And I want you to look at what the typical play is. And I want you to notice how fast he's moving the icons. And these are typical developing kids that have sight, that are interacting with no demands with these symbols. And they're actually very engaged.
Do you have the words? Very good.
You just take them and listen to the sound they're making. What is it?
You take them off.
Why is very tight?
So there's a 2-year-old. Here's the 5-year-old, and he's actually making the patterns with them.
Oh, well, he's playing with them. Are you putting them on?
He was mad because he took one away from him.
Can we put them on like this?
Mm-hmm.
And he's already lining them up. He's never had these before, and that's your typical two-year-old with no expectations. Why
them
in that finger? One started doing it, parallel play. The other one does it.
Out.
And they are bilingual, so better than me. So anyway, so that's your typical child, and we have to have some typical expectation for play for our children. And I think that's another piece that's missed. We have to engage with them. We have to go at their pace. I let them have that. I would do that with a child with a disability with these same symbols. So the next one are two children I had before, and these children are actually, these children are actually deaf and blind. This is a 2-year-old child who's deaf blind, and this is a 4-year-old who has deaf blindness. And both of these children, before I gave them these task buckets, were literally just getting people to chase them around the room. This is what they did. And so this is the first time they were ever exposed to these buckets. And I want you to notice it's something interesting to them because of the tactile component. And pay attention to, not only, you saw the two-year-old that was just quickly throwing them. Pay attention to their physical exploration of these objects. Now, these are kids, these are older kids now, I don't have them anymore, but we're starting to try to get some videos of kids with the samples, but it takes a little bit of time, so we have to be patient with that, and we will have them. But just see what typical children with no expectations that are deafblind, oops, I think I messed it up again. I'm going backwards. Oh, I turned the thing upside down. But it was inconsistent and it had no communication partners other than their parents that could understand their signs. And so that's what you need to think about. They're children first, and we need to grow them. We need to build a system for them. And I think this is really a valuable consideration when I'm working. And if I could go back in time 10 years and see those kids, I would have given them both these systems. But I can't, so we'll work smarter going forward, learning from our mistakes from the past. And it's never too late, because now I'm going to turn it over to Heather, because she's doing a fantastic job with older kids in a classroom.
And unlike Shannon and Ken, I can't remember what I put on the notes, and of course added more stuff at the last minute. If you want the extra notes that I wrote, I'll get your email address and I will share it with you gladly. And I'm going to have to read from this, because I have really bad memory, and if I get excited about talking about Hasmeen, I'm going to tell you all sorts of stories, and it'll be 11 o'clock, and I'm going to go to the airport, so I'm going to start. So, I'm an education specialist in Woodland, California, which is north of Sacramento. I have been in special education for 12 years. I've been assistant technology specialist, AAC specialist, for 6 years. And I would like to introduce you to Hasmeen. Hasmeen is 20. She's bilingual. She has perceived limited receptive and expressive communication. We don't know, because we haven't explored enough, and we've only had Hasmeen with us for a couple of years. In this picture, Hasmeen is sitting at a table with three fingers of each hand touching the top and side of a 3D printed bliss symbol. Hasmeen uses some basic I want statements, you know, I want cookie please, I want help please, in English and Spanish. Over the past 3 years, has learned to verbally express her emotions more. She'll often exhibit echolalia when she's frustrated. Sometimes she's overwhelmed, or she'll ask to listen to Vivaldi's Spring from Four Seasons. That really helps her to stay calm and aids her in her transitions. When Hasmeen came to our class, she relied on others to provide the time transition between lessons. You know, okay, 30 seconds, timer goes off, we're going to do our numbers. People did not talk with Hasmeen other than to provide time transitions and tell her what to do. Hasmeen does not like to transition from one thing to another. She's gotten better, in part thanks to all these bliss symbols have given her a lot of independence during her day. In our class, she rejected the timers and all the other recommendations her previous class had told us to do. She would refuse to transition. She would scream and cry. bang her cane on the floor, sometimes for half an hour. Our VI specialist, our vision impairment specialist, showed me traditional tactile symbols that Ken showed you earlier, and how they could be used as a tactile schedule, so that has we could anticipate transitions and have a little bit of that control. Hasley showed us that she really liked the tactile schedule once she got used to it. It took about 2 weeks for her. She'd ask for items to put on her schedule. She, you know, we'd offer her choices of what she wanted to do next, within those parameters of under our control, so that she's working on what I want her to work on. She'd independently go to the place in the classroom that she kept her schedule. She always wanted it in the same place. She didn't want to carry it around. Do what you want, as long as you're using them, you know. She carried it in her backpack when we went to the store or the park or wherever she wanted to go. While she was getting used to those traditional to glued on icons, she'd pull the pieces off, she'd fidget with them, she'd bend them, she'd bite them if she didn't like what we were asking her to choose from. She'd fidget, and staff, me, would accidentally take them home and put them through the washing machine. How many people have done that with other students were interested in them, and they would explore them, and lose them, and pull up pieces. We'd find one in the playground 3 weeks later, half buried in the dirt. We made the same traditional tactile icons for Hasmin every single week for 2.5 years, until I met Ken. If we couldn't replace those traditional glued-on icons by the next day, because Hasmin needed to tell us what she wanted, she would go back to those behaviors that people didn't understand, you know, screaming and crying and striking out at people. So she was showing us that she valued these icons greatly, but we need something more durable. Nope, it's upside down. So, bliss symbols as a tactile schedule. This has been in September when we first introduced them to Hasmin. So, it's a novel language system for her, but in a familiar format, so that we could help her understand the context of what we were asking her to do with these symbols. So, because it was a familiar concept to her of here's your schedule, here's what we're expecting this morning for you to work on, it was relatively easy for her to associate these symbols with the actions that we were asking of her. So in this example, Hasmin's using bliss symbols as a schedule of activities that she'll do that morning. She has symbols in front of her representing walk, then cooking, then piano. So she's going to go for a walk first, come up to class, and we'll do some cooking. And then after that, she can do piano, which is her most favorite thing in the world, is to play piano. So she would have these to remind her of the expectations, of the transitions, and to help her aid in communication. Hasmin, what?
Thank you.
Show me, Hasmin.
Bye.
Hasmin, what do you want?
What is yellow?
What is this?
Oh. I got
it. Okay, all done, Hasmin. Yeah.
Spanish or Scottish accent. It's good.
No one understands me in English, so it doesn't matter. So in this video, it has been sitting at the table with the bliss symbolics of what anybody should do more and all done in front of her. She started to vocalise and she was frustrated. She had a bit of whining. So I placed the bliss symbols in front of her, prompted her to tell me how she wants to proceed. If she gave me the more icon, I would offer Hasmin to continue the work that she was doing before she became frustrated, because that's the natural consequence of her giving me that icon. If she continued to be frustrated after providing the more icon, I'd immediately give her the all done one to show her, you know, it's okay, you can be done, you just made a mistake, tell me what you wanted. And then give her time to process that frustration. When we're learning a new language, it's really frustrating. You mess up, you've got that green owl telling you to try again. It's okay to make mistakes. He's right. It's okay to make mistakes. But when we're allowing our students to process those emotions that come with learning a new language, it's going to give them more positive reinforcement as opposed to, no, that's wrong, let's try and get it. Let's try. We don't want to hear that. Let the student process, let them become frustrated, let them problem solve, let them gain more buy-in to learning this new language. That patience that Shannon was talking about is key. And so, going back to that, see, I got off script. If Catherine gave me the all done high five first, she'd immediately be finished with her current work. She'd then be prompted to choose a different neutral activity. We want to focus on the icons and not her just going to piano all the time. And advise that once she completes the neutral activity, then she can do this piano, because that was last on her schedule. So, Hasbeen was fading there. You heard, hopefully, that I was giving her a verbal prompt, where she was fading from a verbal prompt to being independent and using the icons. I was like, oh, because she's frustrated. Her mind's not where I want it to be. I'm going to help her out a little bit. It's cool, so long as she's telling me what she wants. I'm going to move forward with that. So by knowing what's expected of her and being able to anticipate future activities, Hasbeen has gained some control of her day. After 3 months, we've not needed to replace the bliss symbols due to breakage. They can't be bitten or ripped. Some have gone through my washing machine, but they survived. And I gave them back to her the next day. Currently, Hasbeen's mastered 9 bliss symbols, you saw there. She uses bliss symbols to help focus on transition using, you know, first then. If she's having a hard time transitioning, she manages her own daily schedule, given choices that I mentioned. She's not yet interested in learning which symbols and rhymes are than adjectives, like you saw. You see here, she's not interested in what's on the top. And that's okay. It's only been a few months. So we'll keep asking her to expand her knowledge, and she'll show us when she's ready to learn more. It takes years to learn a new language. And from this, when Hasbeen shows us that we're ready, then we'll be able to introduce more literacy concepts using the same bliss symbolics that you saw Ken showed you earlier, how the bliss symbolics can build upon each other using those simple shapes to create more complex concepts. So in this picture, Hasbeen's using the pre-made lesson from Volkswitch.org to learn body parts. You get to explore this in a moment. She's sitting at the table with 3D printed bliss symbol of face and other 3D printed icons of individual parts of the face. Hasbeen learned to match the icons to the face and in turn to identify the icons of her own face part. Hasbeen did not show us that she knew the labels for face parts before using bliss symbolics. Or maybe she wasn't interested, or maybe we didn't ask her the right way. Hasbeen often becomes echolalic and stressed and frustrated. It took about 6 weeks for Hasbeen to independently identify the parts of her face, using bliss symbolics to support that. Learning bliss symbol facial features can make it easy for Hasbeen to show us if she's in pain or discomfort. If she smells something, there's multiple ways that can support Hasbeen's communication. And she will not always make it facial features in the way that we're teaching her. It appears that she's initiating conversations with us using these. Like she'll be like, ear, and she'll hand his ear like, oh yeah, that is the ear. Here, where's your ear, Hasbeen? She'll show us. Hasbeen, feel my ear. My ear's small. Yours is big. And so now we're having a conversation. We're introducing new, more language concepts to that and supporting her to initiate, you know, wherever that conversation is, we're starting where the student is and going with it. And then we'll have her and I kind of be, dude, where's my nose? And she'll be like, it's all over again. Nose! Oh, there's my nose! Ah, oh, it's got snot in it. Ew. You know, we'll start laughing. And now there's another concept of that language development and growth that we're seeing there. Since starting to use bliss symbols in September 2022, Hasbeen has increased her independent transitions between lessons, independently asked if she wants a break, which is not part of the bliss symbols, but it's something that's shown she's gained confidence in her language and communication use. identifies parts of the face, initiates communication, and has increased her speaking vocabulary. More confident and consistent in her communication, and is growing daily. Like, she loves to tell me no when I ask her to do something, and I will listen to her tell me no all day within context. Have a great opinion and what? No.
So Heather, I'm going to...
We're done, yeah.
Thank you. So I'm going to move quick through the slides just so you get to the final one where you can say whatever that is, the stop code. And gee, I told you you'd have a chance to ask questions, but I lied. But you can definitely come up. Thank God, there's no bell at the end of this.
There's nothing after us.
You can spend as much time in here as you'd like. You know, answer any questions you'd like. But, you know, I say, thank God there's no bell in the class. That's the team volunteers. There's your stop code. Please come up if you can to the front and check things out. Oh, we'll talk about those when you come up, I think.
Yeah.
Just so people don't have
to. I'm going to give you a short convince. He's got some that actually speak.
And this,
so you can make a free
that's
spot.
The personal state where you just want a local sound and
she.
You can also hook it up to a speaker system and play for the classroom. So, yeah, please come up, ask any questions you'd like.